Hello and welcome to All in IT Radio. Join us as we talk about everything related to information technology and some other random stuff as well. Help us as we try to find how IT relates to each and every one of us and what the story headlines really mean. Hello people out there in internet land. Once more we have gotten a hold of a microphone each and we are talking directly to you. My name is Kenneth and with me as always is...
Henrik!
Hello Henrik, how are you sir?
I'm pretty fine. The sun is high on the sky and I'm not quite as high on the sky as it, but I'm fine!
Sounds wonderful.
How are you sir?
Yeah, how am I? That is a question hard to answer.
It sounds like Hamlet.
Yes, I was thinking about Hamlet actually, but I couldn't quite figure out how to weave that into the conversation. Still, it's getting a bit hot here in Sweden. I might have a temperature of, I don't know, 25, 26 degrees. And that's Celsius for you who are degrees impaired.
Tropical evening.
More or less. So what will we talk about today? We have three news stories today that we will try to cover. If I ask you, if you could tell me with one word what those news stories are, could we try that?
Yeah.
So I say the topic for the news story and you give me one word what it's about.
Okay.
The first news story topic is Windows 8. Can you give me one word to describe that?
Fail.
Fail, all right. So we have Windows 8 fail. And then we have Google browser support.
Then I say win.
All right, nice. Google browser support, win. And finally, we have kidney.
Fail.
All right.
That's fail, win, fail.
We have fail, win, fail in this episode, and we hope that you will be engaged by the discussion, so you will get back to us in one way or another. Do we have anything stopping us from getting this show on the road?
Yeah.
What?
Your mama.
This could get nasty, people. Anyway, we will try to get through this in a civil manner. Let's get this show on the road.
Yeah, let's go.
June 1st at the D9 conference, a little company known as Microsoft presented something that shocked the world. Well, no, not quite. The news was that they are actually working on a new version of their operating system, which is using the code name Windows 8, and that is not a shock to anyone. But they also showed a video of how the interface probably will look like and how it will work. Have you seen this video, Henrik?
Yeah, I've seen it. I watched it yesterday.
All right. What's your initial thoughts about it?
My first thought was, what are they doing? Because, as I say in the video, this operating system will is aimed to work at both desktop computers with touch screens, tablets, smartphones, netbooks, the whole thing. And when you look at the UI like that, all right, I see where they're going. These tiles, what do they call it? Do you call it tiles, icons?
Yeah, tiles, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's much easier to use when you're on a touch device than like a normal desktop UI looks like nowadays. So from that point of view, I see what they're doing. But still, I really think they're not on the right track anymore.
But if you take a look at what the other companies who manufacture user interfaces are doing, they are all in one way or another merging what they have in their mobile space into their desktop UIs. Apple, they have two separate OSs. They have the Mac OS X and the iOS.
Yeah.
And they don't want to merge them into one OS, but on the other hand, they are in the next version of Mac OS X Lion. They are supposed to somehow integrate elements of iOS so you can run iOS apps on your desktop.
Yeah.
And if you have a look at the Linux world, we have two new user interfaces. GNOME 3 have released GNOME Shell, and Canonical has for Ubuntu removed GNOME Shell and developed Unity instead.
Mm.
And all of these have sort of this mobile thought behind them. It's large areas, it's not tabs, but large areas which you can point and click easily with your fingers. And they try to use small spaces, small screens in a creative way.
Yeah.
So this is somehow, at least I believe so, this is where the OS UI interfaces are going. They will be more and more touch-centric.
Yeah.
But then if that is a good thing or not, that's a whole different question.
Well, what I'm thinking is that you shouldn't look at desktop environment and a mobile environment in the same way. Of course, you still have to get these two different ways of using an OS pretty tight to synchronize and to use them together. So from that point of view, all right. But it's still two different ways of working when you're at a desktop environment or when you're at a mobile environment. When I see this new Windows 8 UI, I compare it in my head to how the, what was it called? The Media Center edition.
True.
Of Windows.
Another has made that comparison as well.
Yeah. It's, well, the Media Center looks like a presentation environment, and this looks like a presentation environment as well. It's easy to take a glance at if you're on a mobile device. If you take it out of your pocket and quickly want to see the temperature, the weather, the new mail, any missed phone calls, quick access to the internet, and so on.
And that is the thought behind these tiles, is that they will replace icons on your, quotation marks, desktop.
Yeah.
So all the apps, all the applications that you have in your computer will be represented by a tile, and it will have more functions than an ordinary icon. They will, as you say, show more information. If it's a Twitter client, if it's a Facebook client, they will show your feed, what is happening there. And they will show the weather and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And also, this UI will be able to show applications built using HTML5. So the web will be integrated in this with HTML5, JavaScript, and CSS. So you can build an application which will be run on your computer very easily.
Mm.
But still, it will, of course, run all the traditional softwares that you already have. But then Windows 8 will return to a more traditional layout with a start menu and open program bar at the bottom, so it will almost look like Windows 7 again.
Yeah, and that's what I'm when I think about it, as I'm using Windows 7 currently. If and or rather when I then buy Windows 8 when it's released, I will probably resort to the old layout or the old UI rather than using this one, because it's a great way of presenting things. It's a quick start desktop, as I look at it. But for actually doing any work, I tend to get lost in the menus as they are presenting it. So, what I was saying a few minutes ago, that the desktop environment and the mobile environment aren't the same. They are not the same. You don't use them in the same way. Still, you often use these two very tight. You often sync your mobile device to your desktop or vice versa. But still, I think they need two different UIs, even if they don't need two different OS. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're trying to say, but it's not clear that you will actually be able to disable this interface.
Mm.
My first thought when I saw this was, of course, it looks nice, it does, but it reminded me of when they tried to integrate web pages into the desktop with the release of Internet Explorer 5, I think. No, 4. It was Internet Explorer 4, and it was called Active Desktop. And that was really slowing down the computer.
Mm.
You had to go into some right-click menu to disable this behavior, and you could. But Microsoft could make the decision that this is what everyone will use. Still, that crashed regularly. And that was my first thought when I saw Windows 8. Oh man, this shell will crash. And then you will probably, hopefully at least, find yourself at the old Explorer shell.
Mm.
If you don't, if that is not what is underneath, if it's not just a presentation layer as you described it, then Windows could be problematic again in the future.
Because when I saw this the first time, I was thinking, if it isn't only me who is anti-progressive, as it always tends to be when you see new things, I'm pretty much used to the old layout, and therefore I don't like the new layout. But when I thought about it, I came to the answer that that wasn't the thing in this case, because I've seen many different nifty solutions to a user interface. Like, I think it was a year or two ago, I saw a concept video of something called TenGUI.
Oh, right.
Where the thought was that touchscreens aren't that friendly to how you work with desktop computers these days. So what he was developing was a way to use all 10 fingers on a touch device that's lying flat on your desk in front of you, so that you use all 10 fingers for different commands on the computer screen. And that was a pretty nifty solution, I thought, because the UI he presented still looked work-friendly, not just presentation-friendly. It was not only quick ways to get...
It wasn't only bling.
No, exactly. It wasn't only quick ways to get to the different internet applications and so on, but it still looked very nifty to work with. And that's the two... I still tend to look at it as two different ways to use an OS. So I guess that's what I'm having against this new interface, or this new type of interface, because it's not only Microsoft who is doing this. Other companies are doing pretty much the same thing, but with another appeal to it.
A man over at TuxRadar.com, Jonathan Roberts, he said, "Make of this what you will, but I think this suggests that a GNOME team has not only been ahead of the curve when it comes to the direction they've taken the new interface, they've also been relatively conservative in their implementation." So many think that this move from Microsoft actually is rather daring, and they really try to get ahead of Apple and sort of beat them in their own game, since it's Apple who usually are quite inventive when it comes to user interfaces.
Yeah, exactly.
But you were mentioning before the workplace, and that is where I see the big problem. Of course, home users, they can always get used to more or less any interface. It's just a question of using it and learning how it works. But in the workplace, to use something like this, I can't see it. Someone sitting down at their work computer in their cubicle, and they fire up this interface to start their Adobe Photoshop or whatever. I can't see workplaces adopting this user interface.
No, it looks like, for me, the way I call it, lazy technology. Because most people these days, well, they use mobile phones in various ways, but the main reason people use technology in computers these days are because of laziness. They want to get quick access to the things they like or use, and most often it's social networks on the internet, it's IM clients, it's their photos stored on the computer. They're integrating their private life into the technology. And then, yeah, this is a quick way and easy way for them to use the devices. It's not that clumsy. But then again, I return to what I said before, the two different sides for work or for actually doing something with the technology, rather than just using it for check out what's new and back up your photos and on. It's quite a different thing to do.
I'm wondering, why does Microsoft think that touch screens will be such a large thing on the desktop? I mean, we have the tablets, and sure, I could imagine that some sort of laptops will also be using touchscreens, but an ordinary desktop screen, I don't get why they would imagine that touch will be such a large part there.
No.
And I've used UIs that are designed for a touch environment on a desktop with a mouse. It's usable, but it's apparent that it's not made for the mouse.
Yeah.
And the same could be said about, as you said before, when you are lazy computing, when you're sitting in your sofa and watching TV. what interface should you have on your TV? So certainly, I could imagine that they will try to get Windows running on media boxes and such with this new interface. That they will scrap their old media center and, well, everything is a media center now. Because a touch interface is usable with a remote control of some sort.
Yeah.
Even easier than a mouse. But still, I don't know. I'm very hesitant to say that this will be a great thing, even though they are actually doing what we have wanted them to do for a long time. I mean, I myself have said that Microsoft should be more inventive, that they should do something new, that they should forget about the old and reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
And when they do, well, I'm the first one to say that, nah, that's no good.
Mm.
I will immediately revert to the old thing.
But what do you think then of when they will launch Windows 8? Will it be a success or will it crash and burn?
We have to remember that this is the first time they have showed the world anything from Windows 8.
Yeah.
This is the first time they have even acknowledged that Windows 8 exists.
Mm.
So a lot of things can happen. And I still believe that Microsoft has learned something from the Windows Vista debacle and that they actually know more of what a user needs and wants and how to treat an update like this.
Mm.
Maybe I give them too much credit, but no, I think they know what they're doing. But if people will adopt it, if it will be a hit, that remains to be seen.
Mm.
It might be too early. This might be something that people will be ready to adopt, but in a couple of years, in 3 years perhaps.
Yeah.
And that still depends largely on how they roll out this new UI. If it is integrated and if it is the only thing that you can access, they will get some critique regarding that. But if you can revert to the old, to the Windows 7 interface, sure, why not? But the risk then is that they will have a UI that no one uses.
Mm.
Because people are inherently afraid of new things. No, I reserve my judgment until we actually see it in the wild.
Yeah.
But sure, I salute Microsoft for trying something new. That's a good thing. And they have gotten a lot of positive feedback for their Windows Phone 7 UI, which this is heavily influenced by. So sure, why not? Try it out.
Mm.
And the reactions from the web has been mostly along the same lines as what we have discussed now. Some people, I talked to Robin, for example, who we had on the last show.
Yeah.
And he was very positive.
Okay.
He said it would revolutionize the common desktop since it is such a great change from the previous Windows versions.
Mm. By the looks of only this, I mean, we haven't seen anything, to be fair, of how it will look in the final stage. But by the looks of this, my first opinion is that I don't really think that this will be something that will appeal to the customers worldwide. That's mainly based of how I use a computer and how I look at it. And what I'm thinking about when I say that is also how the last 10 years or so has been for Windows. Well, they tried to release or they tried to get their MP3 player out there soon, and that didn't go quite as well as they have thought.
Zune is actually not that big a flop over in the United States.
Okay.
But still, it's not a hit. Over here, we don't have them at all, more or less.
I think they're getting a bit behind in terms of they have been used to creating old-fashioned standard desktop environments, and they have been good at it because most of the world have used Windows. If you go back 3.11, they have used Windows 95, they have used Windows XP, and most people have been used to that. But when they later have found, nowadays most things are happening online. Most things are very tight synchronized with the internet from the desktop environment. And I think that Windows got a bit behind if you compare it to Apple and Google and Linux and other environments. But I may be wrong, because if you look at the game industry, how well Kinect sold when it was released, I wasn't expecting that at all. So maybe I'm just a small percent of those that think this, of that Windows aren't that, or Microsoft aren't that big deal these days.
And of course, we are users. We are people on the outside who doesn't actually know what is going on inside the head of Microsoft.
Yeah.
But there was a report that came less than a week ago about how much support Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, has from his employees.
Mm.
That is, what does the employees of Microsoft think about their boss?
Yeah.
And to make a comparison, the Apple CEO, Steve Jobs, he has a support by his staff, which is measured to 97%.
Mm.
So 3% of those who work at Apple do not support and do not trust Steve Jobs. So most of them do. But over at Microsoft, Steve Ballmer has the support of currently only 29%.
Mm.
That means that the vast majority of Microsoft does not trust Steve Ballmer as CEO. And there has been quite a lot of rumors and people actually shouting to Microsoft saying that we do not want Steve Ballmer as CEO anymore.
Mm.
And he has made some huge blunders, and one of them is just this, that he has missed the tablet computing era.
Mm.
And this was a wave of portal devices that, well, no one could really predict it. But still, Microsoft should have been a lot faster to adapt to this new form of computing.
Mm.
This isn't that old. I mean, we have only have tablets for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But the market moves so quickly these days that a CEO and a company must be able to adapt, even though they are as big, as large as Microsoft.
Yeah.
So Steve Ballmer has received a lot of critique regarding this, and perhaps rightly so. So we might see some changes in Microsoft this coming year. People are saying that he won't last to 2012 even,
mm-hmm.
but that remains to be seen.
I think that partially what made Apple so big as they were during the last decade was that they, apart from make their software, also design their own hardware. And as a mobile device, as a technological device these days, are more or less of an accessory. The customers, or the typical customer, also think a lot about how it looks, not only of how it works. So Microsoft are dependent in another way of other companies who design and assemble the products, the hardware. And those might not have the same appeal as Apple's designs have had the latest years. Because Apple they have had a huge success with their very iconic design, you must say that. And it's very tightly knitted together with the software. So I think that might be one of the reasons why Microsoft has gotten behind. Because when a customer look at a product with a Windows OS in it, or Windows software in it, the companies who have designed the hardware might not have succeeded with the same appeal on the hardware as Apple did, or have.
And Windows has always been running uphill since Microsoft has been forced to take into account such a vast plethora of different devices that Windows runs on.
Yeah.
They don't have any control over the hardware, and there is quite a lot of different kinds of processors and motherboards and stuff that Windows has to support.
Mm.
And with the arrival of mobile computing, there are even more.
Yeah.
If this means that they will try to bring a Microsoft tablet to the market and will use Windows 8, or if they will use Windows Phone 7 or its successor,
mm.
that remains to be seen. But this is making things even more complicated.
Mm.
So they are having a problem with this. If they will solve it, I don't know. They have dropped support for older hardware when they moved to Windows 7. They keep a Windows XP virtual machine in their Windows 7, at least in the Ultimate Edition, so you can run older software. But really, they are trying to phase out support for legacy software and hardware to make Windows a bit more easy to move forward, to develop.
Mm.
And that sounds like a great idea. And I've said that before. I've said that Microsoft should really just scrap all their support for anything older than the current generation. They should actually scrap all their old code in Windows. Windows really needs a complete rewrite from the ground up. Make a new operating system. Sure, reuse the different libraries and the different decisions made regarding how you want Windows to work and look.
Yeah.
But scrap the old code. Make it usable now. This will upset a lot of people, no doubt about it. But sooner or later they will have to. At least that's my belief. Alright, to make sure that this doesn't turn into this week in Windows, perhaps we should move on.
Perhaps we should, and finish this discussion with your words. Microsoft needs to burn their own empire to the ground and rebuild it from scratch.
Let's see Microsoft do a phoenix and emerge from its own ashes. And if it doesn't emerge, well, I won't be that sorry. So burning Microsoft sounds like a good idea either way. Next on the news docket, we have June 1st as well, a blog post from Google saying something interesting. The title was, "Our plans to support modern browsers across Google Apps." And this was regarding Gmail, Google Apps for Domains, and Google Docs for ordinary users. And what was the message they were giving?
What I can make out of this is that they want to scrap out all support for older browsers.
And what is an older browser in this context?
They are saying that IE7, Safari 3, and Firefox 3.5 are losing its support. And that isn't so old browsers, if you say, we should say that. Firefox 4 was released a month ago or a bit more.
If you think about, well, sure, Firefox 4, but you have the main line, Firefox 3.6, in between.
Yeah.
So that will still be supported.
Mm.
And Mozilla has talked about this just a few days earlier, that they will try to move people to the more modern versions, and that exactly 3.5 will stop being supported.
Yeah.
And they will try to get people to upgrade to 3.6 or preferably directly to 4.0.
Mm.
And this seems very conveniently in line with Google's blog post. But you are a web designer. What kind of browsers, how old a browser do you take into account when you develop a website?
Mostly I backtrack about 2 or 3 versions in the most modern browsers. In Firefox, I maybe look at the support back to the 3 release. Safari, the same, to the version 3. And with the IE, a year ago, I tried to even have some sort of backup solution for IE6, but nowadays I'm scrapping that more or less, because IE7 is a mess in its own, so IE6 really needs to go, and Microsoft launched a campaign a few months ago to get people moving on from IE6, so I don't see any point to support that browser. But I try, because IE, Internet Explorer, most of the time tends to be the browser who needs most of the time when I work on support and different solutions. So I try to at least have 2 versions back in IE 9, 8, and then 7.
But different reports say different things. But one thing they all agree on is that IE6 still has, I don't know, something like 5 or 10% of the global market. How can you just disregard that?
The problem, if you look at the problem solidly, the problem is users tend to get lost when the version train are moving on. Partially, the problem is the user on its own, because they should have to take that into account. And the problem may be at the manufacturer of the new browser. Google made another solution to this, and the browser updates itself. The user don't have to take into account to update it. It's on their own. And maybe that's not the perfect solution, but so far it's the best, as I believe, because then the risk of people getting stuck on older browsers are getting smaller. And the problem with IE6, as we talked about, partially I think it's Microsoft's own fault for doing that, because they now, 10 years later, only now they are campaigning that people should really try to move on from IE6. But for a long time they didn't care or didn't say anything about this, because, well, I don't really know the reason for it. But still, even if people are using IE6, sooner or later you really have to scrap the support for old browsers. In the case with IE6, it's a 10-year-old browser. So at least the user must, in some ways, be used to that the internet looks ugly when they use IE6. And for me as a web designer, that's also a way of getting people to really see that they are using an old browser and maybe should update to a new version by designing web pages that do not function perfectly in an old browser. Still, the main, if I do a work for a client, the web page still must work. The basic functions on the website must work in an old browser, like contact forms and the basic needs. But you need to sooner or later scrap the support for the browsers that are really old, because maybe then the people who use these will realize that this can't go on anymore. I tend to come back to the example with the British government, who still are on IE6 because they use an application that was developed for IE6 in mind only. And then when IE7 and IE8 came out, they saw that their application didn't work quite as well in the new browsers. And then they decided to stick to the old version, IE6, because it would cost too much money to develop a new version or a new application for newer browsers. You look at it the wrong way then. And when I, as a web designer, scrap support for the old browsers, maybe people will realize that, as I said, you can't remain on an old version of an old browser 10 years later, mostly because of the security risks, but also the technique is moving, the web development is moving forward. New standards and new ways of building how a web page works.
You have to remember that when Internet Explorer 6 was released, the web looked completely different. The internet was in a completely different state back then. We didn't have all these browsers that we have today. Internet Explorer was the only web browser.
Yeah.
They had crushed the competition, and Netscape had, well, I guess around that time it was just fading into the background. So when Microsoft released Internet Explorer 6, they didn't have any plans to ever do something with it again, really. And that is why it has taken so long for them to get on the train, to actually be part of the web standards that we have today. And Internet Explorer 9 does that quite well. But still, if you look at what browsers today are doing, we have Google Chrome, which auto-updates. The user doesn't even notice that they have a new version of Chrome, because it downloads in the background, it updates, and the next time they start it, it's the new version, and users don't know and don't care. Not quite that unintrusive is Mozilla Firefox, which actually tries to get you to upgrade and does all the work for you, but you're still informed about what is going on. And you have a choice. You don't have to upgrade to a new major release if you don't want to. You can stay on 3.6. You don't have to move to 4.0. Yeah. But Internet Explorer works in a bit of a different way, since it's part of the Windows Update system. Yeah. So if a user has Windows Update activated, they will get the new releases of Internet Explorer. And that's all fine and dandy.
Yeah.
But if you are using Internet Explorer 6, you most likely have disabled Microsoft Update. And then you will never even know that something actually is going on out on the internet.
Yeah, that's the problem.
If you look at where we are going with this, what will probably happen in a year, if everything turns out all right, is that places like, you said, the government departments in England and in different places, they will use Internet Explorer 6 still in 1 year. But hopefully they will only use Internet Explorer to access this local application, this application on the local network that they need Internet Explorer for. And then they will use another browser to browse the web, because Internet Explorer won't be able to handle the web, Internet Explorer 6, that is, in a year's time. And Google, they are being proactive. They are actually trying to help Microsoft kill off Internet Explorer 6, and I just hope they make it. It's a pain to develop for Internet Explorer 6, as you said. And that really includes Internet Explorer 7 and partially 8 as well. They are not fun to deal with. It's just a lot of problems. Yeah. Internet Explorer 9, that's a lot better. So if you have to use any form of Internet Explorer, make sure it's 9. Mm. Or the latest one, at least. Yeah. The latest because one of every release.
When I look at it, I think the Google way of doing the updates of the browser maybe isn't the best thing. Because there may be reasons because to why you want to stick to an old browser. And those reasons might be very valid. And the Mozilla way of notifying the user to update is a more a lighter version of doing the same way as Google. But Google do it first and never ask. And the problem with IE6 is that Microsoft thought wrong from the beginning. Or maybe the climate, the way you, people use the web was different, so they didn't see that they made wrong. Because, well, how the web developed during the years wasn't the way that they expected. But what they made wrong is that the update of a web browser was taking place locally through Windows Update. The way it should have been, at least what I think, is that it should have been no update or been notifying updates through the web browser itself. Because the web browser, at least then, was kind of a different thing or separate from the computer.
But that was their idea. That was the thing that they used to make sure that Netscape never made it. That was to integrate Internet Explorer into the operating system. And sure, that was what the great lawsuit in the EU was about, that Microsoft couldn't do that. Mm. They had to separate their web browser from their operating system.
Mm.
And today, you cannot uninstall Internet Explorer from a Windows computer.
Yeah.
You can remove the links, you can remove part of how you access it, but you can never remove Internet Explorer. Yeah. It is built into the File Explorer and all other parts of Windows.
And fair enough, I'd say, if you look at how Windows are running things. I see the point. It's their operating system, it's their software. If they want to build a web browser into it, fine, do so. But at least the user have to have some sort of control. Pro Linux users do it another way then. They put the users in control of everything, apart from what Microsoft are doing. But, well, what I was trying to say is that I don't see any wrong thing with what Microsoft was doing to build the web browser into the operating system, because they still develop both of them. But they should still take the user into account that the user might have another opinion, and then don't make it so hard for the user to use the software they want to use. And, as you said, it was a war between Netscape and IE6, and that's the major reason why it ended out as it did. And maybe that's just a tragic turn of how history went.
And that was the result of the EU lawsuit, that in the European Union, Microsoft has to offer its users, its Windows users, what browser they want to use.
Yeah.
So they have a specific version of Windows specifically for people living in our part of the world, where when we install and start up a Windows computer, we get to choose which browser we want to use. And the team behind Internet Explorer in Microsoft, they are quite happy. They like that Mozilla took the old Netscape code and created Firefox and actually made a huge hit with Firefox. They are happy because finally they can do something interesting again.
Mm.
Because they like the competition. Microsoft might not like it, but the development team behind an Internet Explorer likes it. They want to do new, cool things.
Yeah.
And that shows in Internet Explorer 9. It is quite a good browser. They have actually tried to make it a good browser.
Mm.
But if you look at the adoption rate, you can see that Firefox 4 is booming right now. I saw some stats on this earlier today, and Firefox 4 is gaining momentum like mad.
Yeah.
And Internet Explorer 9, well, it's chugging along. Nothing exciting, nothing big. But, of course, it is gaining.
Mm.
So they are doing something different. Their models are different, and it gains different results.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't mind. The main thing is, Internet Explorer 6 must die.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I care
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it really is simple as that.
Right, have we beaten this dead horse to the ground?
I think we could do it a lot more, but maybe it's enough.
We will definitely return to talk about web browsers some more in the future. Since we are both web designers, this is something that is close to our hearts.
Yes, indeed.
Last time we talked about Apple a lot, and you referred to a study made that actually saw some likeness between the feelings in the way an Apple fan looked at Apple products compared to how someone religious looks at its religion.
Yeah.
More or less. Mm. And we had an interesting news story June 2nd, I believe, about a boy in China, a 17-year-old boy, who really, really wanted an iPad 2. What did he do? How did he solve this?
He sold his own grandmother on eBay.
And that is what we recommend everyone to do. If you don't have money for an iPad 2, sell your grandma. Mm. No,
that might
quite.
Have been a better solution, actually. But that wasn't the case in what he was doing. He, as far as I believe, he wanted an iPad 2 so badly that he came in contact with a broker who, well, he got a kidney transplant and sold his own, one of his own kidneys for 22,000 yuan, about $3,400 American dollars.
Isn't that wonderful? There are people willing to contact students who doesn't have the means to buy an iPad 2 and offer them a lot of cash just so they can get this desirable object. And they don't have to part with anything more significant than one of their kidneys. Yeah. It's a beautiful story. But it went south soon afterwards, didn't it?
Yeah, his health status declined very rapidly, and as far as I believe, the police tried to contact the broker, but they didn't manage because his phone had been turned off.
Of course.
It's a bit of a moral dilemma, actually. Kind of big.
How so?
It's hard to say who you should blame in this case, because the black market of organ transplanting is pretty big and has been for decades. And internet frauds have been so also. It's hard to see, look at this situation black or white, but the main reason he wanted to transplant one of his own kidneys was to get money, and he wanted to get the money to buy an iPad too.
And it's interesting to see this, as this is the way especially youths of today reason. They want something, bad, and they want it now.
Mm.
He wasn't up for getting a job, trying to earn the money. No, he wanted it immediately. Mm. And it's not that strange that his health declined afterwards, since the word from the hospital is that they are not qualified to perform organ transplants, and they had no idea that this procedure was performed.
And that is even better.
Yeah, it just gets better and better. And in the end, did he get his iPad 2?
They haven't any word of that he actually got his iPad.
So that's great. It's a win-win situation. He didn't get his iPad. He doesn't have one of his kidneys. And he's sick.
Yeah.
But he did get the money, right?
Yeah.
So at least there's that.
Yeah, and maybe he can buy a new kidney from another one.
Well, he has the contacts.
And we're back on status quo, and that's the circle of life.
And somehow it's all Apple's fault, isn't it?
Yeah, you should probably say
I blame Steve Jobs personally.
Mm.
No, it's a strange...
It's a pretty absurd history. And
it is absurd.
It's hard to draw any moral guidelines out of it.
If you want something, some kind of life-changing advice, perhaps you should just say that if you really, really need the money, keep your internal organs and get a job.
Hmm.
How's that for a moral?
Yeah. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Could have been worse. It works. Yeah.
Then we might actually consider ourselves done for this show, can't we?
Yeah. And I must say it was a pretty interesting episode.
We had some interesting topics to discuss, that is true. And neither of the cases are closed. We will probably return to them in the future. And if anyone out there listening to us have something they would like to tell us, if you want to be a part of the discussion, you are very welcome to be a part of the discussion. Just get in touch with us. And if you want to get in touch with Henrik, I think we start with you this time, because I'm eager to hear how you spell your Twitter username. What is your handle, sir?
My handle on Twitter is Warpfuss, @Warpfuss. And how it's spelled, you can read that later in the release notes, because I'm not giving it a go this time.
Chicken!
Don't think that you can trick me into that.
Oh, I think it's wonderful you can't spell your own name. All right, enough making fun of you. But we have an email that is perhaps a bit easier to spell out. How do people reach us here at the All in IT Radio headquarters?
Yeah, and that mail address is, let's see if I remember it, show@aiit.se.
Splendid. And that should be easy enough for everyone to use, so give us your feedback. We're hungry for it. And if you want to follow any news regarding me or the show, you can go to Twitter or Identica and look up at Altinomiti, that is Altinomit, which is All in IT in Swedish. We have a hashtag and a group name on Twitter and Identica, which is AIITR, which you might use if you would like to flag something for our attention. Let me take the opportunity to thank Free Dance for our song this episode, which is called Bats Dances. You can find it on Jamendo, and it's licensed under a BY-SA Creative Commons 3.0 license. Was that all we had to plug this time?
That was all we had this time.
Splendid. Then we welcome everyone to return for another episode soon.
Probably.
And we thank you for having listened to us this time. We will now move on to the sunset, singing
la-di-da-di-da.
Some la-di-da-di-da. Right. You have your sunset, I have mine.
Yeah.
That sounds great. So,
two sunsets.
Have a nice week and have a nice day.
Same to you, sir.
Goodbye.
Aloha.